now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by, and guess what? They're all in the studio. Patty Barkley, Allison Rudd, and Stuart Robson.
Morning, all.
I'm just so excited. Today we're going to be reviewing the action from Liverpool versus Manchester United and Arsenal against Sunderland. We're also going to be debating what clubs need to do to keep their staff in check following some rather unsavory incidents involving air rifles and Scots. So please join us for the next 35, 40 minutes or so. One place to start this week, and it's Liverpool and Manchester United. Lots of implications here, but I want to start with picking on the referees, of course, because we got the qualified referee here. Jamie Carragher on Nani. Now, when I saw it in real time, and this is the only benefit of the doubt Phil Dowd is getting from me on this one, is I thought, ooh, that's definitely yellow. Then, of course, I saw the replay and I said, ooh, that's definitely a red and possibly a prison sentence. But I am not a professional referee like Phil Dowd, and I'm not on the pitch 5 yards away. So I think it's only fair we start with Allison and put her right on the line. Defend your boy Phil here.
Well, first of all, I think Phil is a very good referee, one of the best.
Yes, but even best make mistakes. Even Jesus fell while carrying the cross. Nobody's saying this guy's a good referee or a bad referee, but did he make a glaring mistake, which possibly could have changed the course of the game and also denied the whole nation the joy of hearing Sir Alex Ferguson's views as a result?
Right. I've only done the first level of referee training. I don't know what happens when you become the referee for top Premier League matches, but the very, very basics of awarding a foul, you have to decide if a tackle is careless and it's a free kick. If it's reckless, you book them. If it's dangerous, you get a red card. And in a split second, I don't think it's too ludicrous for somebody, even if they're highly experienced and have been refereeing for a long time, to decide that was a reckless rather than a dangerous tackle. The photograph with hindsight shows that there's a gash on the knee, but that is actually not what refereeing's about. You're not supposed to decide, will I get a medical bulletin tomorrow morning saying that a particular player in a tackle had, because you can get hurt. You can hurt yourself just by your studs twisting in the ground. That's not relevant how much blood might be spilled. You have to decide at that moment if you think it was reckless or dangerous. And I think it's perfectly feasible to decide at that moment that it was reckless.
Right, then having put all those provisos in, then can I throw something out to you? If Phil Dowd were omniscient and he had seen it perfectly and he didn't have a split second to decide, would he have given a red and should he have given a red?
If he had x-ray vision and he could see what's happening under the sock and he saw the exact angle of the studs and he could work out the velocity of the tackle, he may have decided, actually, maybe it's more dangerous than reckless. But so what? That's not what happens.
Patty, you love physical challenges and getting stuck in and stuff like that. So I'm sure you probably don't even think it was a foul, right?
It was a particularly odious foul. I think there's too much physical challenge.
Isn't on the list. Was it reckless or dangerous?
I agree with Alison's analysis of it. I thought it was absolutely spot on. But and I thought Dowd had an excellent match. Overall, as most referees do in most matches. But the point about this is that it showed that non-retrospective refereeing of televised matches is passé. It's gone. Because, you know, what we see in every single match now, we see post-match analysis, which proves that a very, 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 very good referee got something terribly wrong, as Dowd did on Saturday. Therefore, the game is not, it's capable of being refereed by the naked eye anymore. And we just have to understand that and have retrospective refereeing of things that are cynical, dangerous, obviously not this decision or that, but things that are cynical and dangerous. I mean, for I'll give you a perfect example. You won't read it in any newspaper, but in the West Bromwich Albion against Birmingham City match, there was an opportunity which Morrison, the West Bromwich player, put away. But the, beg your pardon, it was Ibulemo or somebody there. Anyway, the striker who scored, I think, the first goal. As he stuck his leg out, exposed leg out to make a very brave finish, I think it was Roger Johnson came across with a horrendous tackle, which missed by about a yard. Now that, retrospectively, should be punished by a three-match suspension. The level of danger and recklessness that routinely goes on in the game now demands that we have retrospective judgment, simply to protect life and limb. Because sooner or later, we're going to have somebody's leg snapped in front of the cameras, and we're going to say, oh, we're going to have to do something about it. Let's do it now.
That man whose name you're mentioning is actually the guy you're looking for is, of course, Yusuf Malumbu, the poor man's Claude Makélélé.
Yeah.
Just for the record.
But it was a brave goal. And we don't want tackles coming into the game that make players tend not to do brave things. I'm thinking back of the Eduardo when he broke his leg. He was doing a brave technique, which is to use your leg to protect... To deter a tackle. Martin Taylor was not deterred by it, and Eduardo's leg was terribly broken in his career. Never. We don't want to lose players simply because defenders are taught to be reckless.
Stuart, I want to be very clear on this. I've had the privilege of spending a little bit of time with Jamie Carragher. I really, really like the guy. Mm-hmm. I think he made a mistake. I think he knows he made a mistake. He went. He apologized afterwards. I appreciate everything Allison's saying. Well, if it's reckless or dangerous or mm-hmm. careless or whatever. Jamie Carragher is a professional footballer. He's mm-hmm. got great control and body coordination. His leg is up way, way higher than it should be. It's not near the ball. He strikes the opponent in the leg. Let's forget the damage he does. How is that not a straight red?
Should have been a straight red, but I'm going to go and say the point is, and we're all missing the point, is that the referee should always be seen to be right. Whether he's made a poor decision, whether he should have sent Carragher, and I think he should have sent Carragher off, we have got to back referees, otherwise you'll get nobody refereeing football matches. Every press conference I hear nowadays is having a go at the referee. That's different in Italy, where they talk about the tactics and they talk about the manager. What could you have done there?
We destroy referees too.
But you do talk about tactics. The English managers don't want to talk about it. Arsene Wenger, disgusted by the decisions given it.
We'll get to Wenger. But, I mean, on this specific point, though, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's spokesman, although he obviously needs one because he's not speaking himself. But right now, I'm involved in a title race. I've got a huge game coming up against Arsenal, an even bigger one in the Champions League coming up against Marseille. And This is something that changed the game. Because, yes, I am 2-0 down, but if he sends Carragher off...
How many times has it changed the game in Manchester United's benefit? You know, it goes in swings and roundabouts.
It may have done, but he also injured my player, who, by the way, Nani is really the only creative force Arsenal United have right now. Mm-hmm. He's leading the Premier League in assists. Who knows how long he's going to be out for. I lose a guy for an absurd tackle like that, and, I mean, should you not have the right to be angry? Should you not go back and say maybe
I would, if I was the manager of Manchester United, I wouldn't be angry with the referee, because the referee only gets one view of it. That's all he gets, one view of it. And you said, as you started the thing, you said, when I first saw it, I thought it was a yellow card.
Yeah, but I'm sitting on my sofa and I'm not a professional referee.
Yeah, but the referee doesn't get action replays. He's a human being. He doesn't get an action replay. Oh, let's have another look at it.
He might know the laws better than you, and he might be more trained in decision making, but he's still got the same eyes as you, and this is the problem. that I mean, Stuart says that we've got to back referees. That's what I was trying to say. That I think it is impossible. We are asking referee. I think we all agreed that Dowd had an excellent match. Yet we are talking about.
I think maybe you should speak for yourself on that one.
Well, Alison said so. She's a qualified referee, or starting to qualify as a referee. I've been
Stuart,
watching.
Stuart, do you agree? Excellent match.
I don't think he had an excellent match because he made a mistake with the sending off.
There you go, 50-50. We've got a hung parliament.
Yeah, and he's saying we've got back referees and he's knocking him.
I'm saying you've got a back referee. That we shouldn't be having debates on the television pundits, about the referee.
We wouldn't be having a debate if you'd agreed with me.
Stuart's right because it's the easy out for a manager who's lost points or whose team haven't performed as they should.
And it's an easy out for pundits as well. Instead of concentrating on... Because most pundits don't understand the game tactically. No, so what they can do is look at an action replay and say...
It was
a bad decision.
If you want anger, by all means, if you're a manager or a player, be angry at an opponent that you feel crossed the line and didn't display good sportsmanship.
So it's okay to be angry at Jamie Carragher,
then? Be angry
if
you want to be angry at Jamie Carragher, but
injured your player. Yeah,
angry at the mother who happens to have a toddler, and the toddler spits at your toddler. You didn't tell the toddler to spit, and the mother says that you're a naughty chap. Don't do that again, and you get angry with the mother. Phil Dowd's not responsible for the tackle, and he did set up a match where he wanted it to be a good game of football. You know, his whole persona was one where I want this to flow. I don't want people to be sent off. I want this to be
This is what gets me. This idea. I mean, I'm sorry. This goes back into the whole like Howard Webb, like the not spoil the game thing. I mean, I'm sorry. If you tackle like that, you know, then you're not spoiling the game. You're spoiling the game by leaving him on the pitch.
Right.
I don't want to send people out. Well, what does that mean? I don't want to send people out. Your job isn't to do what you want to do. Your job is to enforce the rules. Now, if you saw it in real time and you somehow didn't think it was quite as dangerous or as it looked afterwards, that's fine. You make a mistake. But to go on the pitch
I
want to keep the game flowing.
Let him stay on the pitch.
He shouldn't have come onto the pitch with that mindset about, like, I want to let the game flow. Who do you think you are, David Ellery? You know, this is not your job. Your job is to enforce the rules.
It's your job not to be over-officious, to make it all about me, the referee.
No, it's not about you.
Overall,
it's about the rules.
This was a very, very, very difficult weekend for officials. Every single referee this weekend was not themselves. Because of what happened with Clattenburg. I understand he thought twice about ever blooming walking out on a pitch again with the amount of vitriol that came his way because he was unable to apply retrospective refereeing, whether he'd wanted to or not.
And he wasn't able to explain himself either to anybody because he had to shut up, right?
I was at a game at Craven Cottage. When his name was announced, the crowd started to mumble. Oh, it's Clattenburg, right? So immediately they were against him. Every decision he made, they booed. The players were over-aggressive for a game that really wasn't what you would expect to be. And he refereed oddly. He made sure he did these strange body language things where he made everyone notice, I'm looking at this tackle. I am looking at this passage of play. It was almost cartoon refereeing because he wanted everyone to see, I am watching this closely. And I think he was affected by what had happened to him. Could probably done with a bit of a holiday. But I also think every single referee was feeling under pressure, and they should not be under that amount of pressure.
The trouble is they're not allowed to referee with common sense because the rules now, and managers will do it. I've seen too many games this season, and you talk about not being sent. I've seen too many games ruined by a sending off that should never have been a sending off because the rules say, or if he was going through on goal and he's the last man and he makes a bad challenge. The reason that rule was brought in because you didn't want to see Willie Young tackles on Paul Allen in 1981. Blackpool player gets sent off against Arsenal and it ruins the game. Arsenal win the game 6-0. I think it's 6-0. Everett is going for a challenge. You can't even see Shamak coming. He's going to tackle the ball and Shamak has no chance of actually keeping control but just gets his toe there before Everett, and Everett just brings it up. The referee, last man, it could have been a goal. I'm going to send you off. Spot the game. It was the end of the game.
But this specific law, Paddy, is actually not a black and white law. It's designed, you know, it gives the referee discretion of what is a clear goal scoring.
Yeah, but what about when a player's running with the ball and the defender, he just gets in front of it and he then takes the ball across the defender and the defender clips his heels accidentally, he gets sent off for it. It's unbelievable.
When the law was brought in, there was actually advice to referees inserted at the end, which made clear that this was for Willie Young, Paul Allen offence. It was for deliberate cynicism rather than a foul, which had unfortunate consequences. And I think it was a grave error to take away that instruction, just simply in the
ground. You look at the Wolves goal yesterday, or the Wolves penalty yesterday. I thought the referee was absolutely right. Hutton's pulled him back, but it's not the punishment is the penalty and a book. Okay, well, you should get sent off for that.
I thought it was a good decision.
Dirk Kuyt gets a hat trick, an Inzaghi style hat trick. Yeah. Liverpool play 4-4-2, which I thought was kind of neat. I mean, we're not really used to seeing Kuyt up front that much. Luis Suarez.
Who'd have thought? Hasn't football come on an amazing journey where a home team are playing 4-4-2 and everyone's surprised? Looking at the lineup. Oh, we were thinking they might play five at the back, but no. Oh, it's going to be 4-2-3-1. Oh, and then it's 4-4-2 and everyone's shocked. Yeah. Amazing.
Should we maybe be giving some props to Kenny Dalglish here? I know it's difficult for Alisson especially to say nice things about King Kenny, but you know, it was his birthday. He's shown a tactical flexibility which supposedly British managers don't have.
Well, it was good to see him play three at the back when he first went in there and played three at the back, because everybody thinks you've got to play a flat back four, and that was the rule for a little while.
Well, everybody seemed to say we have to play 4-3-3. Remember the World Cup?
Whatever,
all those clever people saying 4-4-2 is dead. You've
got to be adaptable. And that's when players are young, they've got to be shown several different systems and be able to play in several different systems. So when a new phase comes into football, when a new manager comes in, when a new coach with different ideas comes in, you're able as a player to cope with those new ideas. Because the thing that was always thrown at coaches, if they went away from 4-4-2, everybody went, players don't know it, they can't understand it. You can only play 4-4-2. And then as soon as Mourinho comes in and plays 4-3-3 and start winning things, everyone says, well, 4-3-3 is the way to go. It's fashions and fads.
Besides, when Arsenal play the current system, which is the fashionable 4-2-3-1, it's virtually 4-2-4.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea that only having one spearhead centre-forward is in some way more defensive than 4-4-2, I think is...
Valencia played a little while ago without any centre-forward. They play with wide players.
4-6-0.
Yeah, I mean, wide players, they're attackers.
That's Unai Emery, and he's...
I mean,
the most
Brazil team of all time, 1982, played with only one up front,
and he was terrible.
And five in midfield. He was perceived as a weakness. But I mean,
as they beat Scotland 5-2.
I mean, the most attack. I mean, one of the best and most underrated teams I think there's ever been in England played only one up front, which was the Spurs team under David Pleat.
Mm. Clive Allen.
Yeah, Clive Allen, and he scored 49 goals that season. So playing with only one up front is not defensive.
I just want to turn a little bit to Manchester United, because I made this point. I look at the Premier League this year and I think, you know what, nobody's good of the good teams.
Right.
And I almost wonder, you know, should we just not have a Premier League? Yeah, why don't we just not award it this season? But if United win the title in these conditions, I was just looking at this about, you know, who was actually out there. You have a goalkeeper who's 40 years old and is retiring at the end of the season. He's been one of your best players this year. You have Rafael, who I know people are saying, oh, look, he's growing into the role and stuff, but I think he's been hit or miss. You had Wes Brown, who hasn't played since November. And incidentally, I think it's pretty much an open secret, you know, is not on Sir Alex Ferguson's Christmas list anymore. He's basically forced to play him. You have Smalling, who has started 15, before Saturday, started 15 more Premier League games than Alisson had. You know, Evra, fine. You have Scholes, who's 36, and I think is certainly showed his age, I thought, in the game. Is completely overwhelmed.
He's the worst player on the field.
Worse than Carrick?
Yes.
I mean, I think it could have been close.
A lot worse.
You know, Carrick.
At least Carrick ambled.
Carrick who ambles. Giggs is 37, and you know. And by the way, great shout out breaking Bobby Charlton's appearance record. But you know, he's 37. He's not Superman. It's somebody amazing that he's out there and he performs the way he does. Nani goes off. You Bill Berbatov. This was the first game he'd started in a month in the league. I don't know that Sir Alex really trusts him. You have Rooney, who's still having this terrible season. You win the title in those conditions, right? then what do they have to do? They have to build a 1,000-foot statue of Sir Alex Ferguson outside the ground. Either that or not award the title and say, you know, everybody's rubbish and that's why United wins it this year.
When you looked at Manchester United centre-halves yesterday, surely you'd have made the midfield in front of them much stronger.
It was unbelievably poor management, wasn't it?
I thought it was because...
Well, who was he supposed to play in midfield? At one point, I was tweeting with Dickinson.
He had to play three in midfield. With those back two, he had to play three in midfield because Scholes can't defend.
Fletcher has a virus.
Nor can Carrick defend.
Sorry, but Fletcher's unwell.
Bring Giggs into
what
a midfield.
You've
got to play three. You've got to play three in central midfield when you've got those two centre backs playing.
Arsenal and Sunderland, and really, I mean, we've touched upon this, and the two games should really be spoken of together. I mean, Arsenal, I'm just going to say, Arsenal lost 2 points. I thought it was a game where they huffed and puffed, and they created plenty of chances, and there were some contentious issues. But against a Sunderland team, who, by the way, I thought were actually really bad. I mean, Mignolet made some great saves, but Sunderland showed me very, very little. If you don't convert, you lose, right, Stuart? I mean,
yeah.
it's the,
well, I thought actually you're doing Sunderland a misservice in the first half. I thought Sunderland played well in the first half. I thought they had the same game plan as Birmingham had, to leave one up front and to make sure that Arsenal played in front of them. And actually, Arsenal in the first half did try and get the ball in behind Sunderland. Bentner made two or three good runs, and that's when they looked most dangerous, because unfortunately Diaby and Danielson played poorly in midfield, and they couldn't pass at the same fluency, and Wilshere playing further forward didn't get much of the ball, so they did actually go longer on a couple of, and that's when they looked dangerous. And Sunderland created one or two chances. They created an overload against Clichy when Henderson made a mess up of his sort of cross shot, and Session went past him too easily and got a shot in, I think, that Chesney saved. So I thought Sunderland played well first half, but in the second half, when Arsenal upped the tempo, I thought they were going to score at any time in that last 20 minutes, but they didn't take their chances. But they did. I thought Arsenal did show that they were prepared to throw the ball in the box. You know, if you look at the chances again they had, was Shamak in the air, Bentner in the air, and Arsenal.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Vin was looking to run behind people, so there were some plus
points.
That's
the plan B, which Arsenal supposedly didn't have.
Yes,
but they have that now.
Two centre forwards queuing up for a cross at one stage, and one headed against the bar.
Yeah, I think it's a bit unfair to, when you say, "Oh, Arsenal, you know, they lost ground, they lost points that they were they should have had in the bag." They were, if you took out the players that they were missing, you know, Fabregas, Walcott, Song, Van Persie, who's an absolute star when he's fit. If you took them out of any other team, that would be the whole team just decimated. I only saw the highlights, but I thought Arsenal played pretty well for a team
Arsenal
that were not
poor,
playing.
Arsenal didn't
any
play particularly well
players,
first half. In first half, they didn't play particularly well, and it was their usual passing fluency and cutting teams open that they do at home. They couldn't do that, and I thought Sunderland defended well, and the two centre halves defended well for Sunderland, and so did their midfield. Yeah. And I thought Richardson tried to get forward from midfield. So I thought Sunderland's game plan was good, but Arsenal dominated the second half more than they did the first.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I thought they did enough to win. I thought they played. I thought they played in the second half with good, great patience, great variety. I think the performance was written off as a poor one, wrongly, because they were playing against a team that lost four in a row and set the stall out basically, and did it. I disagree with you, Gab, slightly. Having been there, the work and the pressing was actually quite quite good in terms of what they were trying to achieve, which was to negate Arsenal. And yet still, Arsenal kept going and played the percent and created two clear chances for Arshavin. And it wasn't his fault that they were taken away, one by a linesman, one by a referee.
Aha, so it's the referee's fault.
I'm not saying
he's blaming the referees. He's not backing
I'm
referees.
I'm saying
Alisson, get him.
That the refereeing decisions went... referee and linesman decisions went against. I don't blame the referee for the not giving the red card and the penalty, because you know these things are very hard to spot. We all make thousands of misjudgments a day.
I'm doing the commentary on it.
But I blame the
I was doing the commentary and the first one
thought he slipped.
I thought it shouldn't be it was not a penalty. He's got through and he's had a shot, Arshavin. And the second one I said, oh, he's offside. And then when you see the action replay, he's onside.
Well,
so
I was convinced it was onside, that one. But I mean, I've got a thing about onside. But the point about the linesman's decision is it's not, you can't just excuse it, because the linesman, the laws specifically forbid a linesman, when there is the slightest element of doubt, from raising his flag, and he committed that sin. And in my opinion, he should be suspended for three matches for that, because
he
deliberately broke the law. But if
he deliberately broke the law, yes, he did,
because the law is actually says that if there is an element of doubt, and anyone who couldn't see an element of doubt in
so
that,
what about Birmingham last week? What about Birmingham last week when Boyer runs through and gets brought down by Chesney when he was clearly onside?
Correct.
Arsene Wenger forgets about that one when he talks about disgusting decisions and how it's changed the season.
No, that's a fair point. Yes, fair point.
Yeah, and we talk about spur of the moment, but Wenger had a bit longer to decide what vocabulary he was going to use, and to decide that, of all the things that's happened to him in his footballing career, to say that disgusted him, that decision is ridiculous.
Yes, I think disgusted was the wrong word.
In light of all this, I only got Paddy's opinion on this before, so I just want to quickly, before we wrap this up and move to the debate, I want to get Alisson Stewart. Should we assign a Premier League title this season?
I don't know if you're just being a little sort of provocative.
No, I'm actually being kind of serious here.
Yeah, but I think it's a marvellous season. Sunderland, we just mentioned Sunderland. Sunderland are 10 points off a Champions League place, 8 points off relegation. Doesn't get more exciting than that.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely perfect season. And, you know, all you have to do at the end of the season to get the title is to have the most points out of all the teams. I mean, and it's great that there's so many teams that can beat each other. You don't want one team just running away with it.
You don't want
Chelsea doing what, you know, 3 years ago everyone was saying, oh, Chelsea are going to win it for the next 10 years.
Well, you want. I mean, I think what you want is teams who are playing well, and I don't just mean. And I mean, and teams are playing well, obviously, you know, within the limit of their scopes. And
yes, but I mean,
and I think you take Bolton. I mean, forget the top of the table, right? Go beyond that and ask yourself who's been playing, you know, relatively well all season.
Yeah,
and I would suggest Bolton. I might suggest Blackpool.
Yeah.
You know, again, always relative to what they can do. But Stoke actually, you know, I think they need to update their game plan a little bit. But
they're going to win the FA Cup.
Well, whatever. But I mean, apart from those, who can be happy with what they've done?
Well, what I'd just like to say is that what we've been kind of spoiled in the last few years because of the money that sucked in top players into the top level, the Champions League places of the English Premier League. We have been spoiled in that sometimes the team finishing third is worthy of winning the championship.
Exactly.
This year, I think Arsenal are worthy of winning the championship. And I will tell you that Arsenal this season are already and about three times as good as the Everton team that won the title in 87, which had Wayne Clark and Inchy Heath up front.
Sorry, if I can just interject 1 second there. Many of my Everton supporting friends say that team was that basically, had it not been for the aftermath,
you're confusing it with the 85 team, which was an outstanding team.
Okay,
by any standard. But what happened after that was that they bought Lineker, Gray went, Sharp aged, and basically the team lost heart. It lost its manager eventually, and the 87 team was one of the worst champions I've ever seen since the Derby County team of Clough, which was a mundane side and lost something like 13 matches while winning the title. So, I mean, you've got to put it all in a bit of context.
But they were still the best team in the league that year.
Exactly, and they don't mind, as they toast it in Derby, that curmudgeons like me are saying things like I've just said.
Moving on to our debate, we've had sort of a bit of a rocky 10 days as far as player indiscipline. I'm thinking of the Ashley Cole incident. I'm thinking of the Old Firm and those scenes at the end with McCoist and Neil Lennon nearly coming to blows. Also the this Colo Touré situation where, you know, he takes his wife's diet pills accidentally. You know, that's the defense. But you still know that you have to be kind of, you know, kind of silly to go and take. I mean, I was always sort of taught that when you're a professional footballer, you don't put anything medical in your mouth unless you get it directly from the club doctor. So I'm just wondering, is there a slightly growing level of indiscipline and impunity out there? Maybe a growing level of pressure that manifests itself in different ways. For Colo Touré, maybe he's concerned about his weight, so he pops some ladies' diet pills. For Ashley Cole, I guess
Colo Touré, how can a professional footballer that trains every day and has been in the team for most of the time have a problem with his weight?
If a guy wants to lose weight, don't take your wife's Eat Less.
Well, he is eating less. It's an appetite suppressant. That's what he's doing.
Yes, but you can eat less without... If you can't eat less without an appetite suppressant, then you do have a problem in relation to...
Your profession.
Your profession. You're in the wrong job. Can I just ask Stuart, through you, Mr. Chairman, do you ever look at the brawls and wild tackles on the field and worry if there's a chemical element in the behaviour of the players?
No, I had a player at Rushton Diamonds when I was coach there that I always felt he was a bit mad. He was the goalkeeper and he had a drugs test and was found guilty of taking cocaine and was out for a year and a half. And I always put down his mad behaviour to that. And he was obviously on it for a little bit longer than we thought he was.
I'm assuming he wasn't doing lines before coming onto the pitch.
No, but he, yeah. His behaviour was outrageous
except
at times.
Except in his goal celebrations, which he learned from Robbie Fowler.
No, but I wouldn't say that's part of it. I think players would be very silly if they were taking those sort of chemicals.
Right. Alison, speaking of behaviour, I want to go back to the Old Firm last week, and I'm shocked because I I'm shocked about, you know, I've met both Ali McCoist and Neil Lennon, and Neil Lennon's a very bright guy. Ali McCoist, you know, is a funny, laid back, nice man. These guys have both been through, I'm guessing between them, probably more than 100 Old Firms between sort of player managers and so on. Exactly. And at the final whistle, this stuff boils over like this. I don't quite get the thought process that goes into it, or lack thereof. But also, I'm just wondering, the clubs, right? I mean, Celtic's big boss is Dr. John Reid, who, of course, is the former Secretary of Defense, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
To me, if this guy was still in as representing my organization, first thing I do is I say, okay, you know, I don't care if it's right or wrong, but you don't behave this way because it's dangerous, because it can lead to more violence. First thing I just suspend Neil Lennon for a week or 2 weeks because you're my club employee. I expect a certain standard of behavior. And I would expect Rangers, you know, to possibly do the same with McCoist. You do that, and then you deal with a possible fallout and so on. And yet this kind of stuff doesn't happen. I
mean, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen because of the way, just because of the way football is. You look after your own. It's like if only.
Yeah, but John Reid's a politician.
Yes. But if only, for example.
And he's a doctor, right?
Sorry. If you've got a philosophical issue.
Sorry, proceed, Dr. Rudd.
No, a logical way to progress after the stalemate over the Wayne Rooney elbow in the game against Wigan would be for the Manchester United hierarchy to say, we do not want a player representing our club to be that violent on the pitch.
He can't be
suspended, so we will suspend
him. I think there's a slight difference.
No, I don't think there is a difference.
No, well, I mean, I would submit that if a manager or coach behaves this way, this is far more serious than a player on the pitch. First of all, you know, a manager tends to be older. A manager actually physically represents the club. Mm-hmm. He's not in the heat of battle in the same way that a player was. I'm not condoning owning Rooney, but you know, Rooney does not Rooney is one element that represents Manchester United. You know, McCoist is the assistant coach or assistant manager, whatever his title is at Rangers. The other one is the manager of Celtic.
But you know what? You know, Neil Lennon and Ali McCoist, and I'm totally with you, Gabby. What the supporters will say, they show passion. And this is the one thing that's wrong. Every time I watch a game, I am, and I use the word that Arsene Wenger used, disgusted with the way the managers and coaches behave on the side of the field. Yeah. That technical area, they might as well not call it a technical area. It should be known as the have a go at the fourth official, have a go
play
at
pen.
The playpen. And we go back to Sunderland. Steve Bruce, when he's at home, he doesn't do it quite so much away from home. When he's at home, he just plays up to the crowd. He plays against the fourth official. He plays against the assistant. It is embarrassing. He's playing to his audience. When they're doing well, he raises his arm to the chairman. I can't believe that the chairman don't see through their manager and say, listen, I don't want you behaving like that.
The thing is, Steve Bruce, you know, sort of playing around in the playpen, as Dr. Rudd calls it, that doesn't lead people to go try and bash each other's heads in after the game.
It does. When you see them head-to-head with the fourth official, you see them head-to-head with each other. The game I'm talking about...
Okay, but it's not like after the game I'm going to run around and look for fourth officials and beat them up.
But when
you've got a Rangers manager and a Celtic manager going head-to-head, and given the background of the story...
Arsene Wenger and Alan Pardew not so long ago, head-to-head. Remember when West Ham scored a late goal? They went head to head. Owen Coyle and Steve Bruce end up head to head in a game that I went to go. This happens all the time, and it shouldn't happen because they should have more control. How do you expect the players to have discipline? How do you expect the crowd to have discipline when the most important person at the football club, the manager, is misbehaving on the side of the pitch?
I think that's part of the issue here, what you just said. The most important person at the football club.
Under the most pressure, most excused ridiculous behaviour, because it just...
But that's why the manager should not be the most important football club. There should be a chairman, somebody who represents the club. And in theory, there are people like that. Bobby Charlton supposedly represents Manchester United. I mean, there should be a good, healthy face of a football club that you can put forward. Now, I appreciate if I'm Celtic and, you know, obviously between Neil Lennon and John Reid, the good face of the club will always be Neil Lennon because of who John Reid is.
Yes.
Do you remember punch-ups or near punch-ups between managers in the past?
Nothing.
The
point about it is that Neil Lennon and Ali McCoist are mates. Unfortunately, I think in the modern game, and I agree with Stuart, I think they spend more time on one technique than any other, which is badge kissing, and trying to convince the crowd that they are as passionate as they are. It seems to be part of the game now. You have this ludicrous behaviour of Bugera, and it's not just players who've been at the club for a while. They come in, and in their first game, they have to commit a bad tackle. This is Rangers Celtic I'm talking about, but it equally applies to Manchester United. Mm. I mean, Carragher, that's probably the worst tackle Carragher's perpetrated for 5 years.
The Liverpool fans moaning about it, they'd say, I'll tell you what, Carragher shows some passion,
but it's up to, and that's why I find Reid and the Rangers leadership, I find them rather pathetic because they're old enough to know better, and there should be a coming together of those two clubs and a joint press conference, which I think would probably be more important than any suspensions and so on, at which they say, we've made fools of ourselves and of Scottish football. We're very, very sorry, and we're going to make damn sure it ain't going to happen again.
But why? Because they've worked together to fight sectarianism and so on, right? I mean,
oh,
the situation's
yes.
not
mean,
the way it was
are,
30 years ago,
improved.
Right?
Some things have improved, but... You know, some things have got worse, and it was interesting. I remember when Rangers started signing English players, the likes of Butcher and Woods and so on, they became more Scottish than the Scottish, more old firm than the old firm. And there was this tremendous... OK, Graham Roberts was there, so it could have been in a cemetery, that fight. But they were so determined to show that we are more Scottish and we are more Rangers than you, that they all had this great punch-up, which was, in fact, even worse than Saturday's.
Well, isn't it panto, then? Aren't people just playing
it's
a
panto,
part?
But it isn't funny, because the point about it, the reason it isn't funny is that the role of football is to... is to regenerate. Everything in football is to do with regeneration and the next generation coming through. And that's why it's deeply, just as, you know, on the technical side, the long ball's bad because the children won't get so much enjoyment out of it coming through. Equally, a good example has to be shown to children. It's fundamental to the existence of football.
Paddy, thank you for that. And I thought it was very eloquently put, and I agree 100%.
Well, that's what you get when you hire me.
Time now for some quick hits. How about that? Gary Cahill scores two as Bolton defeat Villa and leap up to seventh place. Paddy, can you name three English central defenders who are actually better than our Gary Cahill?
Yeah.
And also, is Owen Coyle your manager of the year?
First question, Ledley King, Rio Ferdinand, and, well, John Terry's a better footballer than Cahill, maybe not a better central defender.
Ledley is King? Owen, he can't walk.
Ledley King is the best central defender in England. But, English one. And is Owen Coyle the manager of the year? Well, he's certainly a leader in the clubhouse.
All right. Ledley King on crutches right now. I'm not quite sure. I should have probably said fit, able-bodied ones.
In that case, the answer to your question would have been no.
Spurs are held to dry Wolves in an end-to-end game. Stuart, was this a great game or was it actually a bit of a car crash?
It was a great game. You want to see good goals. You want to see plenty of forward action. There was plenty of chances. Midfield players run into the box. But if you do all that, you are going to have some poor defensive play. And it was a great game on a bad pitch. You don't usually see good passing and good goals on as bad a pitch as you saw at Wolves on Sunday.
The Molyneux groundsman thanks you. Speaking of Wolves, I personally thought they were absolutely jobbed by the referee, both with Hutton's non-sending off and Stearman's disallowed goal. Alison, you're the resident ref. Stick up for your fraternity, or sorority as the case may be. And please tell me you feel just a little bit sorry for Barnsley Mick McCarthy.
I thought McCarthy was so dignified after that. I mean, he got a draw, but really, they did enough in many ways, actually, and in the way they played to have won. Boy, it's so rare to see a team in the bottom three playing such lovely football. And I actually disagreed with both Mark Halsey's key decisions in that game, but they were both, there's a case there, and that's how he saw them, and I wouldn't criticise him for it.
Mark Halsey, actually a very nice man.
Gab, anyway, listen, one for you. We're worn out giving answers, and also we want to find out about FC Bayern, the most high-profile club in München. They've lost again, this time to Hanover. Louis van Gaal looks to be on thin ice. Why? I mean, after all, aren't they within 190 minutes of knocking the holders out of the Champions League? And didn't he come, van Gaal, within 90 minutes of winning the treble last year?
Indeed he did. And in fact, in my column in the game, I sort of draw an analogy between Van Gaal and Carlo Ancelotti. Of course, both double winners last season, both fourth place, and yet one of them seems to be in danger of getting the sack. One of them has his boss, his president, coming out and saying that, you know, that this is a situation of grave concern and basically having a go at him. I think the real reason is, and this is an important life lesson, is do unto others. If you're nice and respectful and people like you, they'll tend to give you the benefit of the doubt. Witness Carlo Ancelotti. If you go around, you know, behaving like a Louis van Gaal, then you'll find yourself in trouble, especially when you've got two outspoken, hardcore Germanic dudes like Hoeneß and Rummenigge as your employers. That's all we've got time for today. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis. Also, our web chats. Mine's on Mondays and Paddy's is on
Tuesdays.
Thank you, Paddy, for that. You also get Ollie K. And for a bit of North of the Border flavor, how about Graham Spears' web chat on a Wednesday? But don't worry, we'll be back next week. Catch us then. Goodbye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.